You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Judy Rumler, the chair of the Fed Up Coalition. Judy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Judy, I got an email from your organization a little bit ago about a rally that your coalition was holding in Washington, D.C. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are and what exactly is the Fed Up Coalition?
Sure, Dave, I can do that. Obviously, my name is Judy Rumler, and I am the mother of Steve Rumler, who died of a prescription drug overdose, an opioid overdose, after becoming addicted to opioids, OxyContin, that was prescribed to him for chronic pain following an injury. He struggled with his pain for 8 or 9 years and tried all sorts of ways to get rid of his pain or to get relief from his pain, but eventually a well-intentioned family doctor did prescribe to him OxyContin, and he became addicted after 5 years of being, well, gradually, but after 5 years he was very addicted to these medications and he was a changed person. Before that, he'd been an all-conference soccer player. He'd been a Dean's List student at the University of Minnesota. He was a gifted musician. He had lots of friends. He was engaged to be married. Anyway, the point that the Fed Up Coalition is trying to make is that there are so many of us out there who have been through this and who are struggling. And each day, 44 people die from overdoses of prescription painkillers and heroin in the U.S. And prescription painkiller and heroin overdoses have more than quadrupled in the past 20 years, killing over 16,000 people a year. So these are devastating things, and many of us had tried for a long time to go to the FDA to try to get them to change the labeling of the drugs so that doctors would understand the risks and patients would understand the risks associated with taking them, since there's no real evidence that these are safe and effective for long-term use. Certainly, we aren't against opioids for short-term because they are important at end of life and for acute pain. But when we met at the FDA, a lot of us, we weren't getting anywhere, and so we decided that our little independent organizations, and my organization is the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, and we're located in Minnesota, would get together and form a coalition in order to create a louder voice in Washington to try to get change at the federal level. Many of us have worked hard in our local communities to get change. In Minnesota, our foundation worked for the passage of Steve's Law, in honor of our son Steve, in memory of him, which is a Good Samaritan and Naloxone law, which now allows people who are witnessing an overdose in Minnesota to call 911 without fear of prosecution, and also allows first responders and lay people to carry Naloxone, the drug overdose reversal drug, which is saving lives across the state here and in many other states where similar legislation has been passed. And this gives people an opportunity for a second chance at life and has saved and provided that opportunity to many people. So anyway, the Fed Up Coalition, we came together and we were led by Dr. Andrew Kolodny, who's executive director of the Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing. He's our medical advisor, and we do have many other doctors involved in this effort. This was our third annual Fed Up rally that we had on October 3rd. The first one was 2 years ago, and we had a rally on the Capitol steps. It was on a Monday, so we did have members of Congress who came, Senator Schumer, Senator Manchin, and we had maybe 700 people then, and we've worked hard. Our Facebook page is very active. I would recommend, if anyone's interested, to go to our Fed Up Rally Facebook page. We also have a website. But we've made a lot of progress, we feel. The first thing we were advocating for was the rescheduling of hydrocodone combination products. These were classified as a Class 2 drug and made Vicodin the most prescribed drug in America. They've now been reclassified to be more appropriately Class 2 drug, which means that the doctors cannot write refills for these drugs. People have to go see their doctor. When my son relapsed after treatment, he was able to go to the pharmacy and the drugs were just there waiting for him because the doctor had written refills. And this was a different doctor that he had found at the end who was really a pill mill doctor. But anyway, that was one thing we've accomplished. We've also recently been working very hard to get the president to say something about this epidemic. The CDC has called it an epidemic of opioid addiction and overdose deaths, and we finally have had some luck getting the president to say something, and he's going to speak about it again this coming Wednesday on the 20th in West Virginia, so we're happy about that.
That's great. I'm so sorry to hear about Steve. How old was Steve?
He was 43 when he died.
Oh, geez. Was he married? Did he have kids?
He wasn't married, but he was engaged. He lived with a high school sweetheart that he had reconnected with a few years prior to his death, and she had a daughter who was like a daughter to him. it's, there's nothing I can say except that it's happening to so many people, and it can happen to anyone. People think it won't happen to me, it won't be my child, but my husband and I feel we did everything that we could possibly do to save Steve. And one expression I like to use is, if love could have saved him, he would have lived forever. But the fact that he happened to have maybe the gene that makes certain people really able to become addicted easily, it runs in the family. That may have been part of it. Plus, he had the pain. He had been injured, and he'd been prescribed the drugs for his pain. And that's really the root cause of this whole epidemic, in our view, is the overprescribing. And many well-intentioned doctors don't understand that yet, and we're working to get that information out there and to get the government to require training for doctors before they're allowed to prescribe these drugs.
I took a look at your website, and it's very impressive what you've done in such a short amount of time. You mentioned the rallies that you had, and I just want to read something here from your website. And the history here, it says you were formed in 2012 when several organizations from across the country joined forces. What brought us together was your shared concern that the federal government was failing to stem the rising tide of opioid addiction and overdose deaths. You were especially frustrated with the failure of the FDA to correct a mistake in the Controlled Substance Act, which had misclassified drugs containing hydrocodone as Schedule 3 instead of Schedule 2, where they belong, and by FDA's approval of a steady stream of dangerous new opioids. So how was it a mistake? Was it actually a mistake that they made?
Well, you know, it was, 20 years ago or something, and I'm not really sure. That's all I know is that I've heard they were misclassified, and I don't know whether it was the pharmaceutical influence, and there was some misconception that maybe because these were combined with other things, they weren't just 100% opioids, that they were safer, but they're really not any safer. So it was a mistake, and I think the DEA eventually, they recognized this a while ago. Like, don't quote me, but I think it was like about 10 years ago, they started telling the FDA that this should happen, that the FDA should reclassify these, and they didn't do it, and they didn't do it. And then those of us who are really, were really passionate about it, we sent letters and we had the rally, and then very shortly after the rally, it happened. So we feel that we had a big role to play in that success.
Yes.
The FDA gets, I think, about 60% of their money from the pharmaceutical industry. It comes in the form of fees. When the company applies for approval of their drug or their device, they pay a fee. And that's the way most of the FDA money is brought to the FDA. So it is a conflict. And this was something that, it was called the PDUFA Act, that was passed, I think, in the early 80s, the first time changed the way the FDA was funded, from being funded as just a regular part of the government to getting their income from the pharmaceutical industry. So it's a complicated issue, but we think that this is one of the problems.
Mm-hmm. They changed it from Schedule 3 to Schedule 2, as you wrote here, that hydrocodone. But just because they did that, that really doesn't help, because, as you say, they're approving a steady stream of dangerous new opioids. Is that happening as we speak?
Yes, it is. There's no need for another opioid drug out there. There are already plenty of them, and, you know, there is a need for them. We agree with that. But it's just that the marketing and that happens when a new drug is put out there increases the potential for use and the potential for addiction and overdose, and there's really no need for them to continue doing that. And another thing that's happened is that the FDA has in the past always used an advisory committee of experts to help them make their decisions about approving new drugs. And in the case of Zohydro, their committee voted against approval, and then the FDA just went ahead and approved it anyway. They're not required to follow the advice of these committees, and in the past, they almost always have, and then in this case, they didn't. And then more recently, and I can't remember the name of this drug, they just didn't even bother to call an advisory committee. They just went ahead and approved it because they were, I guess, afraid that the advisory committee might not recommend it. So it's a very difficult situation, and we're working hard to get change.
Yeah, but you have had some change. It's amazing. After your rallies, stuff happened. I mean, almost right away. It's
right.
Incredible.
We were happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's supposed to happen, right, in this country?
It is. Yeah. Right. And this year, the exciting thing that's happening, we had a petition out there, a letter to the president asking him to speak out about it. We compare this request to the AIDS epidemic when President Reagan, in his final years of office, spoke out about AIDS and made people realize that AIDS was not a choice that people made or a lifestyle decision. It was a disease that needed compassionate care and treatment. And that's the problem with addiction, is that people have this stigma associated with it, that it's a choice or it's a moral issue or it should be a legal issue. And we feel that the war on drugs has failed, that we need to find another answer to this. And President Obama finally, a few weeks ago, did include information about the opioid epidemic in his weekly radio address. And this was after we had met several times with Michael Botticelli, who's director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the ONDCP, and told him that this was really one of our most important goals, was to get the president to speak about it, because people listen and expect leadership from the White House. And so now on Wednesday, the news is that he's going to speak about this in West Virginia, which is one of the epicenters of this epidemic. And he's going there and will speak in, you know, a live presentation about the opioid epidemic. So that'll make a difference, too. And that was one of the things that we were working toward most aggressively this year. So we're happy about that.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I'm looking at your letter right now, which is, of course, on your website that you sent to Obama. It says here, the last paragraph, we will not politely and patiently remain quiet while you neglect the problem and allow FDA to continue pouring fuel on a fire. On August 31st, 2015, that was International Overdose Awareness Day, hundreds of us will demonstrate our frustration in front of federal buildings across the country. And on October 3rd, which is what we've been talking about, 2015, thousands of us will march from the Lincoln Memorial to the White House at the third Fed Up rally. We will continue demonstrating, marching, and demanding action for as long as it takes until you finally begin speaking about the epidemic and ensuring that your administration does everything in its power to help bring it to an end. International Overdose Awareness Day on August 31st, 2015. How did that go?
It went really well, especially for the first time that we had tried to do this. I would say there were maybe 30 rallies across the country. Some of them were larger than others. We had an excellent rally in Louisville and in Chicago and in Sacramento and in a lot of smaller towns as well. You know, we've got some press coverage for that, which was good. The idea being that, you know, we can't all get to Washington, and there is this grassroots movement across the country. So I think we were very pleased with the way it went. We can hopefully do it better next time if we decide to do it again and get more people involved. But it is something that is affecting everyone. Addiction doesn't discriminate by gender or by income level or by education level. It can happen to anyone.
Or race or anything.
Or race or anything, exactly.
Right. How was the group treated on October 3rd during the march or the walk from the Lincoln Memorial to the White House? Did any of the security personnel interfere with you? Don't imagine there would be any other people out there counter-protesting. I mean, that would be ridiculous.
No. Well, actually, just to clarify, after that letter was written, we did change the location of the rally itself, and it was held on the Washington Monument grounds instead of at the Lincoln Memorial. So we marched from there to the White House, and we stood in front of the White House. We had a permit, of course, so we had police escort part of the way. This is a free country still, in the sense that we're allowed to do that. We did a lot of chanting, and we had a lot of attention from, you know, bystanders. I liked the march. I thought it was great. We got a lot of energy out, you know, just chanting and letting it be known how we feel about this particular issue.
But you weren't hassled by
Capitol
Police?
No, we weren't hassled. They actually cooperated and helped us on along the way. We ended up at the Ellipse and had a memorial service there where we read the list that we have of names of people who've died from this epidemic. Then we had a beautiful singer named Elizabeth Edwards, who does a lot of music related to addiction and recovery. And we sang Amazing Grace and honored our lost loved ones. So that was the way we closed. It was an interesting combination of everybody being angry and worked up, and then in the end just trying to remember those that have passed already.
Yeah. It's very well known to many folks about federal regulatory agencies, how they become captured by the entities that they're ostensibly there to regulate. And we can say that about the FDA as well. I'm sure political scientists have been studying these organizations for a while. Now, what about what I call the elite media or the mainstream media? Have you gotten any coverage from these wonderful folks?
Well, last year we did get a story in the Washington Post, which was good. And, you know, we do have some people. John Fauber at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is a wonderful advocate. He's done a lot of investigative reporting on this issue and is wonderful. And then Barry Meyer at the New York Times. Additionally, he's written a book and he's also covered the issue extensively. So, you know, there is some interest for sure. I don't know that it ever makes the front page, but we're working on that.
Well, unless, one of the Kardashians becomes addicted. I don't mean to make light of it, but unfortunately, that might be what it takes to really get the mainstream media into high gear. Would you agree
right.
with that?
Well, you know, I suppose that's true. I mean, we have periodically thought that maybe, you know, when some celebrity is in the news with this issue, it would make a difference. But I think people think, oh, it's just their lifestyle, their celebrity lifestyle that causes it to happen to them, instead of thinking, wow, this can happen to anyone, which is more the way people should be thinking about this.
Is there any way that listeners can help out the Fed Up Coalition?
Well, absolutely. We always need donations, and there is a donation button on the website, and there's also a way, I'm quite sure, to contact, or they can just send an email to fedupralley@gmail.com and offer to volunteer. We need people to help plan our rallies. We need, you know, people to promote the cause, and any organization that wants to affiliate with us and become part of our coalition, we'd be happy to hear from.
That talk that Obama is giving in West Virginia, is that dedicated to this issue, or are there other things that are going to be addressed?
I understand that it is about this issue, yeah, that's why he's going there and going to speak about it. He did speak about it in that radio address, and he did a pretty good job, actually, I thought. I don't know whether you heard that, and I don't know where the link is, but it's got to be around somewhere. A couple weeks ago for his weekly address, radio address.
I did not hear that, but personally, it's tough for me to listen to politicians talk.
Yeah, I know what you mean. One thing that Obama did, too, was he did include addiction treatment in his budget for the first time, 2015 budget. It's a very minimal amount, but it is in there for the first time. And also, there is legislation now in front of both houses to try to provide funding for this issue, and based, I guess, on his budget recommendation. But there's an act called the CARA Act, Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, that will do some good. It's just a small step in the right direction, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's how you get things done, and you're doing it. That's what I was going to ask you. I'm glad you brought that up. I noticed just a few of these professional politicians had lended their name and presence to the coalition. Are you disappointed that there weren't more of these people there supporting this issue? Or do you think it's just because they haven't had anybody who has gone through, or they haven't gone through what you and your husband have gone through?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first year we had it on a Monday, and it happened actually to be the day that the government shut down. So maybe these senators and congressmen and women who we invited were able to get there. Senator Manchin is a wonderful advocate, as is Senator Schumer, and then Congressman Rogers from Kentucky is head of the House Caucus on Prescription Drug Abuse, and he's very committed to the cause, and because partially his state is one of those that's been most ravaged by this epidemic, for some unclear reason, the pharmaceutical industry decided to target Appalachia with their marketing efforts for these drugs. And I guess it was partially because there were so many injured people who worked in the coal mines and that sort of thing. But there are many communities, particularly in Kentucky and West Virginia, have just been devastated. I remember Congressman Rogers saying that there was a community that he visited where in the schools there were children who their parents were either dead or they were in jail, the whole class practically. So there's just been a lot of devastation in that particular part of the country, but elsewhere, obviously, too. But I think that's what drew Congressman Hal Rogers into the cause. And obviously Manchin is from West Virginia, so he's got a reason to be very concerned about it. So we do have support. And actually the Minnesota senators, both Franken and Klobuchar, have signed on to the CARA Act. So there's definitely an understanding of the need for this.
Well, that's great. And I'm going to go back to Steve. I imagine it's still difficult talking and thinking about him, but in many ways, I guess, Steve's passing has allowed you, someone as articulate as you are, to potentially, and I'm sure you already have, and I'm sure there's going to be more in the future, save many lives. Have you thought about that?
I do think about it, and people often say that to me. Obviously, I would trade his life for anything else that would be offered to me, but I am grateful that I have been able to turn his tragedy into something positive for many, many other people. I agree that that's happened. And it's happened to a lot of other families who've done similar things. There are other organizations across the country that have really been driven by this kind of a loss and are making a huge difference. And that's where the coalition comes into play. We've all come together to try to bring an end to this madness.
Yes. Finally, if there are some people listening to this interview, and I'm sure there will be, who have gone through or are currently going through the addiction process, is there something you'd like to say to them?
This is really difficult. I get asked this question a lot because I know that in my case, we tried everything we could think of to save Steve. And if you're struggling with a loved one, the one thing I would say would be to make sure that if you're looking for a place that offers treatment, that you look for a place that offers medication-assisted treatment, which Steve was not able to get at the place he went, which was Hazelden in Minnesota. Today, Hazelden does offer medication-assisted treatment, but when Steve was there, they did not. It's not the answer for everyone, but at least it's an opportunity to help people with the detoxing process and and getting used to being sober from the regular opiates. So I would recommend that they consider that option when they're looking for a treatment, and also that they join an advocacy organization or a coalition in their own community and try to find ways to get support from others in the community and to advocate for change in their own communities and join the FedUp Coalition.
Judy Rumler, the chair of the FedUp Coalition. Judy, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And you're doing some great work, and the people out there are lucky to have somebody like you on their team. And I'm looking forward to seeing your progress in the future and talking to you again real soon.
Thank you for your interest in this important issue. I'm really appreciative of this opportunity to explain what's going on. Thank you, Dave.